business annual report.
Good morning. Since we have different panels, but the first case and the remaining four, we'll have a short recess after this first case. The first case of the morning will be Robert Pettit versus City of Chicago.
Good morning. I'm Kimberly Sutherland, and I represent the plaintiff appellant. The plaintiff appellants here were officers who took the 1985-87 sergeant's test for the Chicago Police Department. On this test, the city altered scores and imposed quotas, which ended up helping groups that had already reached parity and hurting a group, namely females, who were still severely underrepresented. The city altered test scores, or standardized test scores, so that the pass rates of blacks and Hispanics would equal the pass rates of the other group, which they call white. The city claims that, and then the city imposed a 10% Hispanic quota on top of the altered scores for Hispanics. The city claims that it engaged in gender preferences to help women, but because the scores were first altered by race, they ended up hurting white women who would have otherwise been promoted. The white women that were picked up by the female quota would have been promoted anyway without these the female quota. Which is illustrated in Plaintiff's Trial Exhibit 20. And a number of women were actually harmed by the combined effect of the altered scores and the quotas. These women, including some of the plaintiffs, would have been promoted anyway without altered scores and quotas, and they actually lost promotion. And my first point, the labor contract, the plaintiffs are urging that the summary judgment should have been granted to them on that. The labor contract prevents the city from using any kind of preferences, including preferences based upon race and national origin, and even sex. The city
Isn't there an arbitration requirement there, and you have to exhaust administrative remedies before?
Okay, we didn't bring a grievance. If we were bringing a grievance, you're right. What's happening here is the city has engaged in voluntary affirmative action, and as a rebuttal to that, we are saying you can't do that because you have a contract and an ordinance that says you can't use race. So we're not coming forward with the grievance. We're using that as a rebuttal to their defense. The city cannot use voluntary affirmative action to get out of its contract, which is what it's trying to do here. And the contract clearly covers promotions by its own terms. To make the city's argument is like saying that somebody could enter into an illegal contract, for instance, gambling, and the other party can't say, well, that's illegal under the law, so the contract's not, so your actions aren't valid. Under operational need, which is the defense that the city was given summary judgment, the city's own superintendent really disagreed with what they're arguing. Superintendent Martin was the superintendent at the time, and Superintendent Hillard, the current superintendent, testified. And they said that it was wrong to divide the city into just the white, black, and everybody else being Hispanic, that the city is made up of diverse groups, including Polish people, Asian people, people from all over. And it's important to have a diverse workforce, but that doesn't mean black, white, and Hispanic. And under the Graft and Gruta, the new Supreme Court decision, the city had a duty, if it was going to look for diversity, to use an individualized approach to determine who would contribute to diversity and not use a mechanical quota, which is what they did.
When is a mechanical quota okay?
If they can show past discrimination, the city didn't get summary judgment on that. It's rarely okay to use a mechanical quota, but if they could show past discrimination and show X amount of people would make up for some to remedy some past discrimination, then it might be okay.
So remedial focus isn't the reason here, that you say it's strictly the operational needs?
The city was given summary judgment on its operational need defense. It did raise a past remedying of past discrimination defense, but it did not get summary judgment on that. Neither party did.
Well, is there some waiver or some other reason why they didn't focus on that?
The court found that there was an issue of fact because they had their statistician Siskin had one analysis out of many where he was trying to show that blacks and Hispanics were still underrepresented, but that his analysis was based upon a false premise. The city had told him that there was no affirmative action nor discrimination beginning in about 1977, which isn't true. And the district court found that that was not true because the city had been using preferences in hiring since 1977. So the pools were all artificially changed because of the preferences that were used.
So that is not an issue then on appeal?
On that issue, we're asking for summary judgment because the court found that the blacks had reached parity. The city admitted that Hispanics had reached parity in 1990, but the city kept using quotas. And the only issue of fact the court found was that a jury could possibly believe the statistician Siskin's analysis, but the court also found that it was based on a false premise. So we're asking not to be sent back so they can present another argument based upon a false premise that the district court found was a false premise.
They don't need to if the operational needs, the defense or whatever, prevails.
If that prevails, they would.
If not, then it would have to have a trial on the whatever you call it, remedial
past discrimination. We're arguing not to send it back because the only issue of fact that the district court found was this statistician's report based upon the false premise. So we should be sent back. The city didn't have a statistical case for past discrimination. Blacks had reached parity, which the court found back in 1981. Hispanics were near parity. They had no anecdotal evidence at all for Hispanics. The only Hispanic witness they had was Joseph DeLopez, and he was hired when he applied. He became sergeant on a quota. Then he became lieutenant, and now he's an exempt, and he was their only Hispanic witness. And they really put on no anecdotal evidence for Hispanics. And their anecdotal case that they tried to make for blacks was impeached largely. And they had some slurs in the 60s, but they were not tolerated by management.
So you might go ahead with the operational needs.
Operational needs. Under the Supreme Court holding in Gratz and Grutter, the city had to use an individualized approach and determine which officers would contribute to diversity. For instance, we have officers that served as neighborhood relations officers in the past, so that experience should have been taken into account. Officers may know other languages that are common amongst big immigrant groups in Chicago. They may know about other cultures, depending on their past experience, and the city made no attempt to see who would fill whatever operational need for diversity that they defined they needed, which they never did. The superintendents, as I said, did not agree with the arguments made by council that you should just, you know, have blacks and Hispanics and then everybody else, and that's all that matters. And in fact, in his deposition, Martin, who was the superintendent at the time, and I've attached that to my reply brief, he was specifically asked, is operational need a factor in the makeup of the workforce? And he said it was for detectives and district commanders, but not for sergeants. He said that white officers can go into black neighborhoods and work effectively.
This is a very troubling case to me. First of all, how long it's taken. We're talking about a promotional examination for sergeant's position 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And now here we're talking about cases that the Supreme Court decided, Grutter and Gratz, just last term.
Mm-hmm.
If this case had moved quickly,
mm-hmm.
or at least a little faster than
mm-hmm.
it did, we would be deciding this case without the benefit of
mm-hmm.
those 2003 decisions from the Supreme Court. Why did this case take so long?
If you look through the record, the city was trying to get an expert witness, and they kept getting continuance after continuance to get an expert witness. They finally got Charles Mann to be the expert witness in my case, and then after discovery was closed, just about a year before trial, they switched to the Siskin. After discovery was closed, they came up with a different expert who they used in the Reynolds case.
I mean, the short answer is you blame the city for taking so long. Is that right?
Right. I had brought earlier motions for summary judgment on narrow tailoring, motions to narrow the issues under Rule 16. I was trying to focus the case.
I mean, don't you think it's sort of odd here to be looking at an exam that was 15 years in the past, deciding whether the criteria then for selecting sergeants based on that exam was...
All right.
Without
Gratz and Reuter, okay, they're superintendents. This is on summary judgment, so the facts have to be looked at in the light most favorable to the plaintiffs. And without Gratz and Reuter, just on the facts, their own superintendent at the time, Martin, plus Hiller, the superintendent now, said that they did not agree with this dividing the city into black, white, and Hispanic, that diversity means you look at all cultures and races in the city, that the city is a melting pot. With Koreans and Asians and
you just forget Gratz and Grutter.
Right.
Just this idea that we're looking at the tail end of 2003 at an exam that was given in the 1980s and deciding whether mm-hmm. the procedures that were used at that time to increase minority representation in sergeant positions was consistent with the law. It just seems so bizarre. Something's wrong here.
Yes, on the operational necessity defense, in discovery, which I brought on my brief, they first denied that they had such a defense. They wouldn't allow me to get any discovery on hiring, which now turns out to be what they're relying on. Like I said, Superintendent Martin denied that there was an operational need for in the sergeant rank to use race. And that's a deposition attached to my reply brief. So we went into trial with they were also ordered to answer interrogatories, specifically saying what their defenses were, what was the factual basis for that. And they, with operational necessity, they mentioned it, but they had no facts. So this was really a defense that they argued at the trial. And they didn't put on facts. They didn't even try to make a case for blacks for operational necessity. There's one.
Well, you referred to a lot of the operational necessity, mm-hmm. at least based on testimony, as referring to it as stereotypes, right?
Right.
And showing that, which is perplexing to me at least, to go into all of this stuff about in order to have it be sensitive, you have to be the same race or
right.
something.
I don't agree with that, and their own people, their witnesses, didn't agree with that. That's a form of racism to even think that.
What is it that they? What is the operational need evidence that you object to?
They didn't put any on.
Wasn't that evidence? I mean, you were saying that these witnesses mm-hmm. were saying all these things, right?
No, they weren't. The city's arguing it. The witnesses don't support them. The witnesses say we need a diverse force. We can't just.
Right. So you disagree with their interpretation of the witnesses.
They're not even interpreting the witnesses. They're just making an argument.
You're into your rebuttal time, I might tell you.
And I just want to mention that I think at trial, the Superintendent Martin said that there might be a need for... Well, he didn't say he needed more. That's the problem with narrow tailoring. He never said he didn't have enough of these groups of blacks and Hispanics. And as I said, they were near parity. So they never really approached narrow tailoring. And these groups were not underrepresented. And they had the race-neutral alternative... went into. Robert Joyce was the Deputy Commissioner of Personnel, of just having general categories of people that passed the test and then using other factors, such as their efficiencies or their disciplinary record. And if they wanted to have look for diversity, that would have been the choice to, okay, now let's look at who has experience in black and Hispanic neighborhoods, who is a neighborhood relations officer, who knows other languages. I mean, so he even knew at the time that that was an alternative, and then, but they just decided not to use it, which is a violation of narrow tailoring right there. All right, thank you.
Okay, thanks. Ms. Solomon?
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The testimony adduced in this case from Chicago police executives, independent policing experts, and statisticians uniformly demonstrated that substantial representation of minorities in the sergeant's rank is critical to maintaining the confidence of the minority community and accordingly to fighting crime and keeping peace. That view, of course, was specifically embraced by this court in Reynolds, which recognized a compelling governmental interest in assuring diversity of minority supervisors. This morning, I will explain why the city's use of affirmative action in making promotions to the sergeant's rank was narrowly tailored to meet the city's compelling governmental interest. There were two types of affirmative action pursued for these promotions. First, the city standardized the exam results so that African Americans and Hispanic officers would be promoted in proportion to their representation in the applicant pool. Second, the city used out-of-rank promotions to advance 10 Hispanic officers more quickly and to promote an additional 11 Hispanic officers. I'd like to begin with a word about compelling interest, because it is the only way, of course, to assess the narrow tailoring. At the outset, plaintiff's argument that the collective bargaining agreement prohibits the use of affirmative action in promotions and means that the city cannot have a compelling interest. As we explain in our brief, the courts have no authority to construe the collective bargaining agreement. That debate is between the union and the city, and it belongs, in the first instance, in arbitration. Plaintiffs have no arbitral ruling that their reading of the collective bargaining agreement is correct, and this court, with respect, cannot provide that reading for them. In this case in particular, there are very good reasons to adhere to that rule, which is a rule of exhaustion, the rule of state law, because their reading is contradicted by the Cox arbitration, on which the district court relied, which found specifically that the contract for patrol officers does not apply to promotion to sergeant. And in addition, it is inconsistent with an interpretation of a similar non-discrimination clause in Title VI, as the court held in Bakke. There is no reason to think that this non-discrimination clause in the collective bargaining agreement prohibits lawful affirmative action. That clause can still be read to give it meaning, as other arbitrators have done. It does apply to promotion to detective. And detective is a promotion. Youth officer is a promotion. From patrol officer, those employees are covered by this same collective bargaining agreement. So the term has meaning and does not have to be construed as applying outside of the bargaining unit.
So there is a distinction then between, say, something like detective and sergeant.
There is a distinction, and sergeant is outside this bargaining unit. I am straying over into the merits of this issue, really just to say that it is not free from doubt. We are urging the court has no authority to decide it, but for plaintiffs to come up here, having never gone to arbitration on this, or similarly situated employees and the union, for plaintiffs to come up here and rely on a particular interpretation of the collective bargaining agreement, namely that it prohibits even lawful affirmative action, that interpretation has never been rendered by any arbitrator in this state, and as a matter of primary and jurisdiction and exhaustion under state law, this court has no authority to make that construction for them in the first instance. So we're back to where we started, which is with the city's compelling interest for the affirmative action that it took. And on that issue, compelling interest, Reynolds holds that police departments have a critical operational need to ensure a sufficient number of minority supervisors. Reynolds specifically embraces the views presented by the city witnesses in this case. The Chicago police executives and independent experts alike, there is a consensus that diversity is the key to success. In this case, the evidence specifically shows that sergeants are the principal supervisors of the officer ranks and the principal liaisons.
Your opponent says that there was no witness that testified that the sergeants required this sort of affirmative action.
The city presented the only witnesses on this issue, and they included
presenting a witness on an issue is different than presenting a witness who testifies that your position on the issue was.
Yes, to be sure. And we commend to the court the testimony of Mr. Cooper, former Superintendent Hillard, former Superintendent Martin, Ivory, DeLopez.
And all of these people said that it was required, that the city's mission required the application that was used in this case.
The evidence in this case is...
No. I'll say it one more time.
I'm sorry.
Did these witnesses testify that it was necessary that the test that we are talking about be done the way it was for the compelling reason that that would keep the force going? Is that what they said?
Yes, Your Honor. These witnesses...
So if I read the testimony of each of these witnesses, they will say what you say they say as opposed to what your opponent says.
Yes, and what they will specifically say is that there is a compelling operational need to have diversity in the sergeant's rank.
Oh, in the sergeant, and that to achieve that, it is necessary that we jigger the results. So that we
because of the way the numbers fell on this examination, which was never validated for use in rank order, the way these numbers fell, to use the exam in strict rank order would have reduced minority representation in the sergeant's rank. It would have reduced it for African Americans as an absolute number. It would have reduced it a little bit for the Hispanic officers from the number of Hispanic sergeants previously holding that rank. And that is because of the severe adverse impact that this test disclosed when it was scored and if it had been used in rank order. And you will find all of those numbers in our brief as well as in the trial below. Exhibit 53 showed that without standardization, the rank order listing in the top 500 candidates, which is what the city expected at the time the numbers were produced, the city expected to make 500 sergeant promotions. The rank order listing showed 13.2 African Americans in the top 500 and 3.6 Hispanic officers in the top 500, and that is about half or two-thirds of the minority officers who took the test. And I want to emphasize, the test was not validated for use in rank order. Plaintiffs had every opportunity to try to...
Why do you do a rank order if the test isn't validated for?
Well, if it's not going to have adverse impact when you do the rank order, you save yourself a lot of litigation from all sides. Every examination the city has given in, 30, 40 years, we've been sued by both minority and non-minority officers.
So you look at it in hindsight, you take the results and say, well, that didn't work out, so now we have to change the numbers?
What?
Because really, this is... The reason the white officers, I presume, are complaining is because they got displaced.
There is no question that that is their complaint.
And they got displaced after what was supposed to be, I guess, a valid rank order, whatever you call it, test.
They were displaced because to use the list in rank order would have severely undermined the city's operational need. And we're only up here in this appeal at this point on the city's operational needs defense.
Well, that, in focusing on that, and in the operational need, is it just in this general term of needing diversity, or is it in terms of what I seem to read in your brief, pretty much throughout it, is that this diversity is needed because of a perception, I thought, by the black community that there aren't enough blacks in the police force.
The perception is actually wider than that. Professor Walker did a survey of Chicago residents. He surveyed minority and non-minority residents for their views on Chicago policing. And as a result, he testified that along with every other witness who testified in this trial, that diversity was key, not for its own sake, but because it causes the community to find trust in the department. It causes the community to feel that the department understands the problems. It causes the department to understand the problems of the community. It causes the department to be better effective at doing what it is supposed to do.
But then they wouldn't, these police officers wouldn't be assigned to certain neighborhoods which are predominantly Hispanic or predominantly Black.
Absolutely not. As a result of the severe deficiencies in the minority, percentage of minority sergeants, we were unable to have a sufficient number of minority sergeants available to deal with the minority community, to be assigned in that fashion, but there was never any intent, and seniority would have prevented us from assigning all minority sergeants to minority neighborhoods. That's not what this case is about. This case is about keeping the city safe, and the city is safer according to the unanimous view of every expert in this case and the opinion in Reynolds as well. The city is safer. The police department is better when its ranks are diverse. Of course there is a need for diversity of all types, but the evidence in this case was specifically in terms of a critical need for additional African-American sergeants and additional Hispanic sergeants.
Now everybody else is labeled white.
Your Honor, to put the others in the white category, if I'm not mistaken, actually is beneficial to the plaintiff's case.
Well, I don't know if it is or not. It does.
Well,
it's obviously not true. I mean, that people who are Asian and other nationalities aren't white.
There are pie charts in the record, Your Honor, showing the city's population. And I believe it is the 1987 chart, which you will find at exhibit 28A, that does has only the three categories: African American, Hispanic, and white. By 1991, the data was more sophisticated. Of course, there had been another census in between, and exhibit 28B. Does have a category for other, which even in 1891 was only 4.2%. Now, I really don't...
Is that in the police department of the city of Chicago?
I'm sorry, that was the population of the city of Chicago. I don't want to be heard to say that because it's only 4.2%, it doesn't matter. It all matters, but what the evidence in this case showed was that there was a critical shortage of underrepresentation for the African American and Hispanic sergeants in particular. And just to give the court one or two numbers in that regard, as a result of all the promotions that were made in this case, the affirmative action added only an additional 18 African American sergeants over the number of African-American sergeants before any of the promotions were undertaken. And the testimony was that the prior number was insufficient. It was 70 African-American sergeants for a city with 31 majority African-American neighborhoods. Now, when you divide the numbers, that's 70 per shift, but they're not all, everybody's not always available. Everybody's not always doing field work.
Available for what?
Available for field work, I'm sorry, Your Honor. To
go out into those neighborhoods?
To go out into any neighborhood. Into the street.
Well, what
and
difference
deal
does it
with
make to any neighborhood if you're saying that there are 31, I think you said 31 neighborhoods
right.
that are predominantly minority?
That was one type of comparison that was made at trial. The percentage of predominantly African-American neighborhoods that could not reasonably be served by a minority sergeant. But we're not looking for a one-for-one, and we're not looking to resegregate the city or segregate it in a different fashion. We are looking for diversity. But the testimony was very clear. 70 African-American sergeants per shift in a city with 25 police districts and 281 beats is just not enough. And the testimony regarding the shortage of Hispanics and there were only 21 Hispanic, additional Hispanic promotions over the number that existed before any of the promotions was undertaken. That shortage was far more critical because of the rapid growth in the Hispanic population. Even after these promotions were undertaken, the African American and the Hispanic numbers were 28.7% of the overall sergeant's rank. And that was to connect to a city with 60% minority population and to serve a city that is as diverse and multicultural as any in the country.
Just to get more of the big picture here, not specifically related to the operational needs issue, how many of these sergeant exams have been held since the middle of the 80s?
This one spanned 85 to 88, as Your Honor knows, and the list was in effect until the last promotions were made in 91. The list was in effect until 92. It was taken down in October of 92, and a new exam was given in 93.
How many tests have there been since?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I regret I don't have that. I can absolutely
but a number
supply
of them?
It by letter. I wouldn't want to guess. I'm sorry. It's not a record in this case.
Well, one thing you did mention in the brief was that this process, at least, isn't being used anymore.
This process is absolutely not used anymore, and I'd like to turn to narrow tailoring with that entree with the court's permission. This relief was limited in time. It was devised to deal with a critical existing shortage, to address the need for diversity. Now, that's the compelling interest, as the court found in Reynolds and as the testimony in this case supports. As for narrow tailoring, there is no evidence of any kind that the city went beyond the level that it needed for narrow tailoring. There was racial distrust and abysmal community relations. The court must remember, we urge the court to remember, we're talking about promotions from the late 80s and the early 90s. The court knows what the city of Chicago, what the racial climate, what the community climate was in the city at that time. This was done to deal with a critical shortage in supervisors and an exam that had adverse impact. That there was specific testimony that the city needed each and every one of the additional promotions that was made, and there was no witness who testified that the city did not need the promotions that were made. Indeed, the plaintiff's only witness, the only witness they forwarded in the entire trial, was Lenore Flaherty, and she testified that on a domestic call with a male, black male partner, the female victim preferred to deal with her. Well, we actually think that shows our point. Policing is about connections, and that's what this case is about. Good policing depends on connections. Good police work keeps people safe. Good police work keeps the city safe. When the court reviews the record, and there are a lot of numbers, the court will see that the affirmative action undertaken in this case was designed to limit retrogression in the African-American composition of the sergeant's rank and make a modest increase in the percentage of Hispanic representation. That's all that it accomplished. There was less than 2% of the overall less than 2% the sergeant's rank was affected by this.
So you would then say, I don't want to words your mouth, but these operational needs justified what I don't think anybody disputes was the discrimination against the white officers that didn't get promoted.
The operational need remedied the critical shortage in the city, in diversity, in the city's sergeant rank. There was evidence that shortage was attributable to years and years of prior discrimination, but the operational needs defense is separate from a remedial defense, and it is designed to deal with the shortfall, to use the language that the court is more familiar with in the remedial context, plausible lower bound estimate. The plausible lower bound estimate of the shortfall needed for operational reasons, not as a remedy.
That sums up into legal discrimination, because you referred in the CBA that the CBA did not prohibit legal discrimination.
We believe that the operation, if I might.
Go ahead.
Our submission is that the affirmative action undertaken in this case for operational needs was lawful and therefore was not prohibited by the collective bargaining agreement. But
well, I'm not worried about the collective bargaining agreement. I'm just talking about legal discrimination as the courts have, I guess, determined. If you have an operational need, it's a compelling interest.
That is the holding of Reynolds, and that is our position here.
Yeah, well, Reynolds, I mean, says a lot of things. At least you have your interpretation of it, so that's okay.
We ask the judgment be affirmed. Thank you.
Would you supplement with a letter?
Yes, I will.
Tell me about those other exams.
Certainly, Your Honor. Thank you.
Ms. Southern?
Counsel for the city has told his court that there was a critical shortage of black and Hispanic sergeants. I'm directing the court to the city's own personnel commissioner's letters. These are the personnel commissioners that set out this affirmative action for this list. Those are city's trial exhibits 10 and 61. And in both these letters, their own personnel commissioners say that blacks were overrepresented in the sergeant's rank because of all of these decades of quotas. And in the 1990 letter from Carr, Carr says that Hispanics had reached parity in 1990. So they're contradicting their own evidence, and they didn't put on any evidence of any kind of shortage. That's the problem. In fact, the district court found that the city had put on no evidence at all in regard to blacks, and that's in its opinion of October 23rd. And that blacks had actually reached parity in 1981. And as to Hispanics, the district court pointed to the testimony of Martin that there were 44 Hispanic sergeants in 1987, but Martin never says that wasn't enough. They're just reading that into that. And there was a shortage of women, the very group that was hurt by one of the very groups that was hurt by all of this. So their actions are irrational. And there was no testimony about racial mistrust and poor community relations. This is coming out of no place. And this expert, Walker, he took a survey, and he actually found the opposite of what they're saying. If you look at the actual survey, not what he just says off of his head, if you look at his actual appendix, which has a survey, there are no questions, first of all, about really going to what they're saying about operational necessity and do blacks have a bad perception of the department. There really are no such questions. And what the people said was that they rarely had contact with sergeants. 80% of the people said they never had any contact with sergeants. And the 20% that did said that most of those sergeants were white and that they were satisfied with the contact. So Walker actually defeats what they're trying to say. And there was a question about what would you do to any of these suggestions about improving the department, and only 2% of the people that answered the question said that the department had improved because of more minorities. They never said they needed to improve more. So they have nothing to support what they're trying to say, that there was a shortage or that there was all this bad perceptions of white sergeants in the department. There's nothing like that. And in fact, their own witnesses say that whites work well in black communities.
Well, everyone seems to studiously avoid this any inference that black officers are more effective in neighborhoods that are predominantly black, and Hispanic officers, or I should say sergeants, are more effective in those predominantly Hispanic. That's not what this case is about, huh?
Well, they never put on any evidence of that.
Well, I know, but this seems what keeps seeping in. I'm not from Chicago, mm-hmm. So I'm a foreigner, and I only look at this as it's what I see in the briefs and all, and it just seems that we're not saying what some really think. And I wonder if this general term of diversity, mm-hmm. meaning that it doesn't matter where they serve and what part of the city, as long as we have a certain diversity, if that's what we're saying, then it would seem that these, whatever 18 or whatever it is a drop in the bucket, however many actually increased in the numbers.
I did cite the Hodge-Hosebrook case, which was a case that came through the district court, and in that case, the black plaintiff said that the black officers actually had violent propensities toward their own people, and they therefore...
Had what?
They actually said that it was bad to have blacks in black communities because black officers have violent propensities toward black citizens. So they actually said the opposite of what the city is saying. And if you're going to...
The city says they're not saying the opposite. They're saying they're not saying that they should have black officers and black
Then I don't know what they're saying. I mean, and also, for instance, if some citizen wanted to complain about a local gang, like an Hispanic citizen might want to complain about a gang member, they don't want to go to an Hispanic officer. The city has no barriers for hiring prior gang members, and that came out in the testimony of DeLopez. So they might feel more comfortable talking to a white officer who's nowhere near their neighborhood and not associated with an Hispanic gang and giving him information rather than some Hispanic officer where they don't know what his associations have been in the past.
Okay, thanks very much. This case will be taken under advisement as it has many times before in other places. And the court will be in a short recess and will reassemble here in a few minutes.